You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Good morning. Verse that Scott read for you, we just had a simple verse, and it may seem a little bit out of context, but you probably caught it. It was at the cross. It was when Jesus was crucified, and he had said that last thing that he said. In English, it would be, "It is finished." In the Greek, it is "telestai," and it has some important shades of meaning, and I'll come to that in a little bit. But Jesus died. And the centurion, who being a centurion, not only witnessed his death, but had been responsible for overseeing and had probably been attached to this detail at least since Jesus was hauled before Pilate. That man, having seen all the things that came before him, and seeing the way that Jesus died, and hearing Jesus' last words, concluded, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." You know, it's interesting to me, as I read through the commentaries, that they all try to undo the force of that statement on the soldier's behalf. Some commentators suggest that it was probably sarcasm. Like, "Oh yeah, that guy was the Son of God. Look at him, he's dead." And some people think that that's the way they want to read it. Some people think, well, okay, he said Son of God, but he was a pagan Roman. He probably meant it in the background of the kind of things that Romans believed. Maybe they had this concept of the God-man, the Hercules story being one example. And sometimes you looked at a particularly good man and you thought, okay, he's a step closer to God than the rest of us. And maybe that's all he meant. Certainly not what you and I would mean by our formulation that Jesus is the pre-existent, eternal, unique, and only Son of God. He surely didn't mean that, commentators say. Read the parallel in Luke. It says the centurion began praising God before he made his statement. Why do we try to dampen the force of what seems to be this soldier so obviously concluded and said? Because it would just be so unusual for a Roman soldier to say that kind of thing. To which I replied, "I think that was kind of the point, Sparky." Of course it was unusual. But it was an unusual situation. It was a big deal, crucifixion. Not like any crucifixion was a minor thing. This wasn't just another rebel or thief dragged to justice. Everybody there knew the story and knew the nature of the charges. And he'd been walking back and forth between Pilate and Herod. And he knew that what was involved in it was in part that this man had claimed, the Jews said, to be the Son of God. And they had some experience, an officer as high as a centurion in Jerusalem, in understanding and managing the affairs of the Jewish people. So he had some idea of what they meant. He knew about those charges. He saw what they did to Jesus. He was a participant, perhaps, at least an overseer in what was done to Jesus. He saw how Jesus bore up to what they did. He heard Jesus question. He heard Jesus answer. And then there was an eclipse, an earthquake, an unusual doings. It's an unusual situation. Why would it not reach the heart balanced image. Surely it would be taken more seriously if it had been made by a rabbi, or at least someone acquainted with theological questions in some depth. What does a soldier know? Well, I'll tell you a few things the soldiers know. They know about death. And they know how people die. And they know what it is to be confronted with imminent mortality. And they know the question. Let me dwell a little bit then on the usages of that word, because we have a big body of Greek literature that survives in which we see how the language of the New Testament is used in society. I mean, we have plays written for theater. We have formal histories written by scholars in the old Greek languages. We have invoices from this business and that. We have some letters home from soldiers. We have love letters. We have a fair body of material that survives written in the Greek of the New Testament era. And we have discovered from reading those things that there are five primary ways in which that word would be used. The first would be this: by a host, when he has made the last stroke of the hammer on the piece he is working on. Tap that chisel the last time, and the last little piece of marble falls to the floor, and you aren't going to do anything else to it, and hopefully it is gloriously beautiful. It's finished, the artist would say. As with the sophisticated project, so with the less sophisticated project, the workman, as he tied the last shock, or lifted the last rock, or placed the last block, he said, "Tetelestai, it is finished. The wall, she's done. Street, it's paved. Field, it's harvested. It's done. It's completed." Perhaps a little more interesting, a judge, when pronouncing that a person's debt to society has been paid, and the guilt has been atoned for in measure and crime, it is time to let the felon go free. You'd say and mark on the appropriate court documents, it is finished. Tetelestai. Fourth, as I mentioned, we have invoices. The word that a merchant held on an account like that, when all the money was delivered, or you arrived, simply stamped the word pay or paid in full, they wrote the word tetelestai. It is finished. Paid in full. And the fifth and last, people who use this word. Soldiers used it. The most usual usage was at the end of the battle, proclaimed as a cheer lifted up by the winning side of a group of tired, hurt, bloodied men standing on the field and seeing that they had prevailed. When they knew that it was done and they were victorious, they would lift their weapons and shout, "Tetelestai, it is finished! We won!" And occasionally, only occasionally, some particular particular groups of soldiers took it up as a battle cry before they entered the fray, to scream, "It is finished before we start," as it were. "We're going to win." And that's all there is to it. Before the first sword clangs on the first shield, we proclaim, "It is done." From that background, the centurion would know this expression well. He had heard it shouted frequently on this or that blood-soaked, rubble-strewn theater of operations. He had shouted it himself on important victories. There had been loss, but the home team prevailed. The cause had been carried forward. And soldiers shouted, "It is finished." Crucifixion victims didn't generally shout that. They died with a whimper, a gasp, perhaps a cry of pain. But I bet not many of them died with a shout of triumph. I'll tell you, counterintuitively, soldiers tend not to be cynics. You might think it would go the other way, but I will tell you that soldiers tend not to be cynics. I've talked about this before, and the only person at the time who recognized this name was Jack Spencer. So we'll see if anybody else recognizes the name, or at least remembers it from the last time I did this. How many of you know the name Ernie Pyle? Not Gomer. Ernie. Okay, Bill and Jack. Ernie Pyle. Ernie Pyle, a dead, you know Ernie Pyle? So, you know, okay. Ernie was an embedded reporter in the Second World War, and he is famous for coining one phrase above all else, and the phrase is, "There are no atheists in foxholes." It was his experience, having been an embedded reporter and watching soldiers in combat situations, that soldiers in combat situations tend to believe in God and call on God. And you can write it off, as many people did, as they criticized Ernie. And I have seen atheist groups criticize him severely for his assessment. They said, "Oh, you're just talking about moments of stress. You're talking about young men who hardly know what they think anyway. They're 18, they're 19, they're scared to death. We're trying to shoot their heads off. Grenades here, rockets there. They're terrified. And of course they scream out to God and their mama and anybody else." So people say, as they critique Ernie Pyle's thought. A couple of years ago, there was a study done at Virginia Wesleyan University. And the short version, and I won't give you anything but the shortest and then just plain short version, because like all studies, it's complicated. Short version is, in 5 decades after being involved in combat, let me say that again, 50 years after being involved in combat, most soldiers remain religiously active and faithful. Not just in the moment of stress and fear and terror. 50 years later, soldiers who saw combat, those men in those foxholes, 50 years, are still, by and large, religiously active, faithful men. The study measured it, and it came out this way. Soldiers who saw, well, let me start with this. Soldiers who did not see combat, soldiers who worked as a mechanic in desk jobs, whatever, never were on the front, never got shot at, never were there when the bombs fell on the airstrip, just didn't see any of that. Those soldiers are still more likely, by a few percentage points, to be religious than the population in general. Soldiers who saw no combat are still maybe 5% more likely than the population in general to be religious 50 years after their dismissal from the army. But soldiers who saw combat, it averages out that they are 25% more likely to remain religious 50 years after they saw combat. I say that it averages out because there is this: the hotter the combat, the greater the odds that you will still be a faithful, practicing, praying, believer in God 50 years later. The hotter the combat you saw, the greater the odds. And then the final thing from this study: if you received a Purple Heart or, in a non-posthumous manner, a Silver Star, you are the most likely of all to remain faithfully religious 50 years after combat. Turn to my question. What do soldiers know? They know God. Perhaps their knowledge of him was sharpened in moments of intense crisis. But it was a deep enough knowledge that it cannot be erased by the passage of time. Soldiers have something to teach us, and I hope that we learn it, because we tend to forget we are all at war, and the battle rages around us every day and every minute of our life. And the great enemy of our souls would like to see us destroyed, and we have one. Exactly one object, and it is to stay close to Jesus Christ. 50 years, 80 years, or however long, to still be walking with him when the call comes and we leave this life and step into eternity. This is what soldiers know. You know it. If not, we're going to give you an opportunity to find out today. Do you know God? And are you trusting in Jesus Christ?
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.